The following is a recorded presentation brought to you as a public service by the Sachem Central School District. The comments made during this board meeting do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of WSHR and its staff. If you have any questions or comments about this meeting, please call the Sachem District Office at 631-471-1300. Or you may write directly to the District Superintendent at 245 Union Avenue, Holbrook, New York, 11741. As a reminder, all members of the Sachem community are encouraged to attend school board meetings whenever possible. The location and times of these meetings are posted on the Sachem calendar, or you can go directly to the Sachem website at www.sachem.edu.
Carol, any visitors?
Negative.
Thank you. Before we go into the presentations, just quickly, what I'm going to do, because listening to the several radio broadcasts that we've had already, just one of the things that I think people would be unfamiliar with is who's here. So rather than do a roll call, I'm just going to say who's here. So therefore, if people start hearing voices in the discussions, they have an idea of which board members are here. Mr. Stile is present, Mrs. Slinkowski, Mr. Sayers, Mr. Palmera, Mr. Boddy, Mr. Falco, and myself, Mr. Kiernan, are present at the meeting tonight. The first presentation, thank you, Richard. Also, I should really say which staff is here as well, because they're certainly part of our table of discussion. So we have Mr. Singer, Mr. Kopp, we have Gil Garage, sorry Gil, and we have our attorney, Chris Clayton. And she's gonna be doing a thing. And of course our superintendent, Dr. Murphy. How quick I forget everybody's name when you're put under pressure like that. Now we're gonna have our presentations. We're gonna try to combine the TRS approval and the GASB 45 in one discussion and presentation. Charlie, you wanna introduce?
Well, we have Mary Ann Van Dyne here. She's going to go through this presentation. She might as well come up and discuss this. Bruce Singer is also going to help out in the discussion because we have some budget implications with one of the presentations tonight.
As Mr. Kiernan had said, I'm here to give you an update on some of the accounting changes that are going to affect the school district this year as well as in future years, and to give you an idea of how your decisions are going to impact your financial statements as well as your budgets. We had touched base a little bit last year regarding the TRS accrual, which came down January of 05, where the GASB as well as the Comptroller's Office required all districts to be on the accrual basis for TRS, Teachers Retirement, and ERS. Fortunately enough, the district was able to be on the full accrual basis for June 30th, 2005. So we did not have to deal with giving you a qualified opinion. For June 30th, 2006, the budget was prepared on a cash basis because this decision did not come down until after the budget was prepared, which means for this year, if we don't have any extra money in the budget to accrue for the TRS to be on the accrual basis and you're on a cash basis, we would have to give you a qualified opinion as of June 30th, 06, if you're not on the accrual basis.
Can you explain qualified, what it is? Some people may not know what that is.
Okay, a qualified opinion is basically we would put an explanation in the opinion saying that your financial statements are in accordance with standards, with the exception of the recording of the TRS accrual and the ERS accrual. So it would be a separate paragraph, and we would also refer to it in our footnotes. We had two schools this year that we did have to give qualified opinions to, and they discussed it with their financial advisors as far as what would the impact be in getting a qualified opinion. And I believe, Bruce, you spoke with your financial advisor also, and it would have little impact on your TAN borrowings. It may have some impact on your long-term borrowings as far as your interest rates. So really, that's the negative impact if you aren't on the accrual basis. Some districts, the districts that haven't been able to be on the accrual basis, have made a plan to be on the accrual basis within 2 to 3 years. So that's an option that you would have as a district to make up for that shortfall over a few years rather than accruing and including in a budget a big increase. And I believe that the shortfall, Bruce, for 06 was 2.5 million between the cash basis and the accrual basis for 06. So if we didn't accrue this year and you're on the cash basis, you would have to make up for that in the following, say, 1 to 2 years. So that's the first issue that's affecting school districts and your district in particular. The other issue is GASB 45, which is going to affect you in June 30th, 2008. So you have some time, but you really need to start planning, looking for an actuary to come in. And essentially what GASB 45 is you're going to have to put a liability on the books for retirees' health insurance. And this is going to affect your district-wide financial statements, your accrual basis financial statement, not your fund-level financial statement. So it's a little bit different from the TRS accrual. The only impact would be on the governmental-wide and how the authority, the financial agencies, when they review your financial statements, how it's going to impact how they evaluate you if you don't have a funding plan in place. And nobody's going to be able to fully fund your retirees' health insurance liability. This is going to be a large liability. I know Nassau-Bosie's got an evaluation done a couple of years ago, and the liability was $107 million. So we're talking about a big number that no districts aren't going to be able to fund it, but you do have to have a plan in place to put some money aside. And like I said, it does not affect your general fund. It's going to affect your GASB 34 financial statements. You're not required to be fully funded, but when we do our financial statements in June of 08, in our footnotes, we will describe what your funding policy is and how much you funded over 3 years compared to what the liability is. So you need to have some sort of a plan in place. So I think at this point, the best thing to do is to get an actuary to come in, do the calculation so you understand what kind of liability you're dealing with, and then based on that liability, then start discussing some sort of funding plan over time to put some monies aside. That, as I said, is not going to affect you until 2008. But all the districts are going to be going out for actuaries at the same time, so it would make sense for you to go out as soon as you can so that you get the best price that you can get and you can be insured that you have an actuary is available to do it in a timely manner. Your district was phase one for GASB 34, so you will actually be one of the first districts to implement this because you were over $100 million budget revenues in 1999. That's the threshold. So you, as well as a handful of other districts, will be implementing it a year before the rest of the districts on Long Island. So at least you do have that benefit of being able to find an actuary before those other districts are. So with that news, I don't know if anybody has any questions, but those are the two big impacts that are affecting you financially as far as your district-wide as well as your fund level. I also just wanted to give you an update on our audit and where we are at this point. We're meeting with the internal auditors next week. And as we had discussed last year, now that they have a year under their belt, we're going to sit with them. We're going to sit down together and do a risk assessment and design our audit procedures so that we have the most coverage of all your internal controls, so there's no duplication of effort, that we're making sure that any of the areas that we feel should be looked at are looked at by one of, at least one of us, and maybe even both of us if we feel some areas should be really looked at closely. So I have an appointment with the internal auditors next week. They're coming to my office. And once we meet, we're going to come up with a plan, and then we will both be working hand in hand all year to cover all the internal controls.
Before we open it up to questions, maybe you could also explain, I mean, these requirements came from the controller's office on both of these issues?
The GASB 34, the accrual of the TRS, first came down from GASB, and then the controllers sent out a memo to the school district saying that this is a requirement based on the GASB requirements. We're telling school districts that we're also going to make sure that you implement this. So it was a combination of the Governmental Auditing Standards Board, right, and the controller's office.
But as our auditor, mm-hmm, the board, you know, weighs heavily on your opinions of these things, and we're also going to need Bruce, which he will in a few minutes, give us the financial implications of both these things. But we really need to know also your opinion as our professional on how to handle each one of these things. Now, you did lay out a couple of ideas, mm-hmm, but are they your recommendations to us of doing like a long-range plan on one and the accrual basis on the other, to stay with that and just take this slap on the hand letter from you?
Depending on your how it would impact your budget, I would prefer that you would be on the accrual basis, because that's the proper way of doing your financial statements rather than taking a qualified opinion. So there is some negative to it because your interest rates will go up. We don't know to what impact it's going to be, but there is going to be some negative impact by having a qualified opinion. Some districts had to do it because they couldn't handle it in their budget. So as far as the increase in the budget from the accrual versus the cash, percentage-wise, I guess, Bruce, you would know better what kind of impact that would be on the budget. But as an accountant, I would say that it's preferable to be on the accrual basis because that follows the proper standards.
Right. Okay. That's what I figured the answer would be. All right. Rich Sayers.
Thank you. You had mentioned that June of 2005, we were fully accrued.
Yes.
Could you explain how we became fully accrued for 2005 and why we're not accrued for 2006?
Well, 2006 isn't completed yet, so we're not quite sure where you're going to end up as far as fund balance in 2006. So you may be able to be fully accrued, but at this point we're not sure.
So I think you just answered my question. We became fully accrued in 2005 because we applied fund balance to that? Because we never budgeted for full accrual in 2005 because we weren't even aware of this regulation until after the budget was already made for 2004-05.
If you recall, in the prior years, we had a combination of reserves, liability accounts actually, and what we budgeted, so it was sufficient monies for the past 10 years. It only became a requirement, as Marianne said, last year, that we had to fully accrue in the liability account and in the budget, so it became an issue. Not for us, because we had enough money for year one. Year two, which is the year we're in now, 05, 06, we budgeted $8 million. We should have budgeted $10.5 million. And we said, we'll deal with it, you know, over a couple of years, so we didn't drive up the taxes for this one year. But hopefully, if we could underspend the budget due to other factors, retirees or other factors for the 05-06 school year, there's a potential that we could be fully accrued. Right now, we're projecting about approximately $1 million to be underspent, but that's in January. As we go through the budget year, February and March, we'll have a much better idea how much we're going to underspend this year's budget.
So the answer to my question is we took money from the reserve account for TRS, and that's how we became fully accrued?
Each year at the close of when the auditors came in, we would fully accrue for the past 12 years. From the monies in the budget, we put into the liability account. We were always fully accrued. this year's a change. We had sufficient budgeting. We budgeted sufficiently, and we had sufficient monies in our liability account up until this year, which was a change, which was now mandated. And also the rate increased went from 2% to approximately 8% in the 1 year. So the amount of money went up dramatically. In the past, it was only $2 or $3 million. Then it went to $8 million, and then it went to $11 million within a year and a half. So the amount, the contribution went up dramatically, plus the new law at the same time, which said that we had to have the money in the liability account.
So we were always on an accrual basis. That was our form of accounting prior to before it became required.
That's what led to our AA credit rating. Moody's and Standard & Poor's reviewed that for about 10 years prior to us going out for that $228 million bond issue. That's why we got extremely favorable rates, which in turn we saved $20 million on the borrowing because we were always fully accrued. That's absolutely correct.
Right, and last year when Ms. Van Dine came to see us somewhere in January and brought this to our attention, I believe the initial budget projections were around 27% because we were trying to fully accrue, and due to the fact of how high the number was, last year's board decided that we were going to do $1 million a year or something in that nature.
That's right. Initially, it was a 24% tax increase. One of the ways to bring it back down, we had the full amount in there, was to take the criticism, not in June 05, but in June 06, as Marianne said last year, and we would fund it the $2.5 million over 3 years. That was a conscious decision that we made so as not to overtax people in this 1 year.
Thank you.
Other questions on this? It's kind of an important issue, guys, because it has a direct impact on our budget figures. Go ahead, Richard.
Well, my next question would be, Bruce, and I don't know if we're putting the cart before the horse, how does this affect us for budgeting next year? I mean, I see that you have a couple of different options, and I'm sure there's ramifications for each one of these options.
Right. The options, as we're going to learn more, I mean, our first budget meeting with the board will be in February, but right now these are our options. We budgeted $8 million. If we're going to fully accrue next year's budget, would be an impact going to $14 million. Part of that, the $2.5 million, is a one-time. Once we make up the shortfall, you don't have to make it up again. So that shortfall we can make up with our unreserved undesignated fund balance. If you recall, last year we anticipated $1.7 million and undesignated, and we were going to appropriate $3 million. We did not appropriate the $3 million because of the defeated budget, so we actually have $4.7 million as unreserved. To take $2.5 million of that $4.7 million to equal out the tax impact of the one-year shortfall, because it's a one-time event. Once we catch up, we catch up. It won't happen again in the future, and our unreserved would drop to about $2.5 million. So that's one mechanism, but of course then we would be fully accrued of June of 07. Not June of 06, we're talking about the 06-07 budget, because we wouldn't have the funds. I don't know if we won't, but that's one mechanism of being fully accrued. The other way, which is potentially we can have, if we have the funds in 05-06, then we just transfer money, a budget transfer to the TRS line, and then we put the money into liability, and we could be fully accrued for this year. That's another possibility, which we would know more like February, March. I mean, right now it's $1 million. If we could get another $1.5 million, squeeze it out of the other budget lines, we could do that. That's probably our best option at this point.
So you're saying that we have $4.7 million in unrestricted reserves?
Unreserved, right.
Okay. So in reality, by us being on contingency, the $3 million that we would normally use as a revenue offset or one shot, okay, is actually almost putting us in a better financial picture for coming up for this next year for this particular reason.
Absolutely.
But what happens if we go into the following budget season, and in the past we've always used fund balance to keep the tax rate down? What then happens if we decide to use the $3 million in fund balance or whatever is left over in fund balance to buy the tax down? Are we going to put ourselves in a hole the following year when it comes time for this TRS or anything else?
That's an excellent point. As long as they're one-shots like this shortfall will be, we won't have to make up the money. Then it'll be the normal tax normal increases that TRS rates come up with. But like what happened with the 18% is because we the way we budgeted, we didn't use reserves for ongoing expenses, not for one-shots. These were regular budget increases. So when the increases came in the second year, we didn't have the reserves again. That's what led to the 18%, you know, tax increase.
Now, one other thing, and Governor Pataki just came out with his State of the State address, and he's touting a $2 billion surplus. Do you see, and I think a lot of people are interested, right away you think state aid, but do you see perhaps, and maybe you're the wrong person to ask, maybe Mary Ann, do you see perhaps a change in the way of the TRS calculation or the funding, so that when school districts, because the TRS is based on the stock market, when the market's doing good, the rate that we have to pay the employer is very low. And then when the money dries up, it works backwards. When the money dries up, that's when the percentage is high. Now there's no money, and we're paying 9% in the TRS, which is handcuffing the communities. Is there a way, or do you see a way where this can be changed, where, you know, it could be driven based on the stock market? You know, when there's a lot of money, you put it away, you sock it away, and when there's no money, you use it.
It definitely has to do with the investments that they do, the comptroller does for the retirement system, and the rates are definitely directly related to that. The problem is that they lowered the rates to 0.36% 2 years in a row, and then after that it only went up in small increments, and what happened was they weren't planning for the future. It was a short-term look at lowering the rates, and whether it was a political move or whatever, it's putting us in a bad situation now because we're making up for the rates being too low. So I can't foresee that the rates are going to drastically change. Right now, they're projecting for the following year 8.5% to 9.5%, and this year it's 7.97. So it's still going up based on projections. So we can't bank that they're going to change those rates.
But what I don't understand is back in the 70s, and I wasn't around, but I understand the percentage of the TRS was a lot higher than what it is now, mm-hmm. and we were in a recessed economy back then. So you would think with the 20 years of history that we've had that people would learn. And to me, I don't understand that. I'm a businessman. If I don't put money away, I mean, I could have some good months, but if you don't put money away for the bad months, you're going to be in trouble. And
right. It
doesn't make sense to me.
It doesn't. I agree.
But Bruce, with the question about knowing what we're going to have in June, you'll figure out February or so, you have a pretty good idea. But this board has to make a decision by March 28th to have a full budget for the community. They'll have to make a decision on budgeting before that point to know that if we have all that money coming back, that $2 million. What's the recommendation? What's going to be the recommendation for the board?
By March, we'll have a good estimate of our June 30th fund balance. We'll know where we track. Actually, that's Ron Sachs. Every day he tracks the budget status report. He gives an update every day of expenses that are going above budget, expenses that are below budget. So by mid-March, we'll have a very good handle on where we anticipate to be.
So they can make a recommendation that we'll have the money in June, even though you're thinking it's going to be there. Okay, good.
We'll have a recommendation to the board so they can fund this. Actually, Rich, the last page of the memo, January 3rd to Charlie, shows the rates going back to 1978-79, which was at 22%. And then you could see each year, or they went up to 23%. And then each year they went down as the economy was getting better in the 80s and 90s. And as Controller Hevesy said, they were artificially lower because of the stock market when the true rates of their payout was about 8 or 9%. So even though they knew they were paying 8 or 9% to retirees of the pension, they weren't collecting enough revenues from the municipalities.
That's because they were using the windfall
from
the stock market.
That's right.
Instead of, if it almost makes sense if you took that 8% or kept a normal rate, 5 or 6%, and just kept putting it away and reinvesting that, and instead of giving it, you almost, from my perspective as a board member, you almost feel like, well, now you're down to 2%. Well, you know we have X budgeted. Let's spend it somewhere else, not thinking about, not thinking about the rainy day. And then when reality sets back in, we're in this position, and we all know what happened last year, and it's this board's goal to get a passed budget that's, taxpayer sensitive.
Yeah, absolutely right. And that was the point of that the New York State Teachers Retirement System realizes that, that by undercharging the school districts, it had a good budget effect for that 1 year, but the long term was a bad effect because it was coming back to charge to much higher rates in a much harder time.
Any other questions for Marianne before we cut her loose? Thank you. Any for Bruce on these two issues? Bruce, you're going to get us. So we're going to have a good idea from you what the numbers lay out to be before this board has to select.
Yeah, my first goal, my first option that I would recommend to Charlie and the board is that we fund it through budget lines in 05-06. That would be our best bet. And then to use the 4.7 unreserved, undesignated for other factors affecting the taxes. If we can't do that, then we'll offset in 06-07 the TRS increase with a combination, proper budgeting, and the one-time shortfall through the unreserved fund balance.
Mr. Sayers.
Yeah, Bruce, just with regards to the GASB 45, have we or has your office started an action plan and we're on the way?
Let me get out that memo. We put out an RFP. I've actually been in contact three or four times with the actuarial service. So she gets an idea. The lady's name is Amy Hicks, who's done this for many school districts. We're going to put out an RFP. We'll come back to the board within the next, probably, not the January board meeting, February board meeting, with a recommendation to hire the firm for in next school year. So we'll have the price today. We'll lock it in. We'll perform the services next year. She'll tell us how much it'll be. I don't know how much it takes about 3 months to do the actuarial study. After they do the study, then we're going to have to budget in 07-08, some portion of that. You know, we're larger than Nassau-Bosie, so if Nassau-Bosie's was $100 million, ours is going to be a lot larger.
Yeah, 100-year plan. That's the way we can handle that. Any other questions for Bruce on this issue? No? Okay, Marion, thank you very much. Bruce, thank you for this. The next item is the audit subcommittee. Anybody going to handle that one, or am I on my own?
Well, we're meeting with we're scheduled a date. Bruce and I have been in contact with Tony Falco, Rich Sayers, and Dave Arana, who's not here tonight. We picked out a date, and we're going to meet two different times. What is that date? January.
January 24th, 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock for one committee, the budgeting committee, and then we're going to meet again at 7:45. And really, these are board committees, so the board will really give the direction and set the expectations and the tone for these people for their jobs that they have to do, whether it's on the budget or the auditing committee. So we just need those three individuals to give the direction, and then Bruce, Ron Sachs, and I will be, as I guess, part of the process to ask questions and go back and get information, but really we want to make sure that those people are operating themselves and they're a board-directed community committee that then brings back some recommendations to the board. But we just want a kickoff meeting to set the direction for them, and the board will set the direction for this committee. It won't be the administrators because it's the purpose.
Now the board members of this selection committee, these three members, then when they sit down with these community members on this committee, they and yourself and your staff are going to have that direction to give to the people, or you're going to do it then?
And then after that, really those committees are going to start running by themselves with the administrators there just to help and help answer questions and be of assistance. But these committees are supposed to run really then after the board gives them direction, supposed to run, be autonomous by themselves and run, because we don't have board members that are really on participants. They're supposed to be independent workers. But we need the board to give them the direction because they are board committees.
Mr. Palmera?
Have we notified the community as to who these board who these members are on each of these committees yet? Has that gone out? So that in case, you know, I know there were a lot of people, you could only choose so many. So maybe these folks could be a conduit to other folks out in the community who would like to have some information or have some input So I don't know if we've done that yet. I haven't seen anything, but are we going to do it? When are we going to do it? And have we decided how these folks are going to be contacted? If I'm on one of these subcommittees, would I be offering up my email address so that if someone in the community wanted to get something to me, they could email me? Or I don't know, if you thought that far ahead.
We thought that was going to be all part of the first day, that orientation, to go through it. You know, do you give them a part of the website to provide information? How are you going to communicate with the community? How are you going to communicate with the board? Eventually, these people are going to have to come back and communicate with the board. So they directly should be involved with the board first, rather than starting putting things up on a website with information.
Right,
so,
but
and we don't want to make sure, we want to make sure that the board has some control about the recommendations that they're making.
Does the community know who these folks are?
They know who the people who were selected received letters and
phone
calls.
No, I know they know, but does the rest of the community know?
No, other than being on the board minutes, no.
Can we do something so everyone knows, whether we, even if we put it on the website, maybe get it, put it as part of the newsletter?
We could put it on the third quarter newsletter.
I think Mike's point is well taken. In other words, there are people out there that have applied for this particular committee and have heard nothing. Is that your point? And that's not good. No, that's not good. I know we have it in the news. Well, that's what he asked.
No, every person who, the 65 people who applied for the auditing committee, 65 people who applied for the budgeting committee, and then there's an even larger number who applied for the legislative committee. The auditing budget committee people who were not selected received letters and were encouraged then to sign up for the legislative committee. But they were all contacted.
There's two things. Was everyone who applied for whatever, were they all contacted and say yes or no? Okay, so that's a good thing. The second thing is we should probably let the rest of the community know who these folks are.
Oh, yeah, that's being done in the newsletter, and I also think it's going to be on that's being done. This meeting, is that going to be an open meeting? Announced open meeting?
Not yet. No, that's not.
Yes, enough. I mean it's not a board meeting.
It's not a board meeting.
So it's, okay, Mr. Falco.
Yeah, I think going into this, the first meeting, I think you said the 24th, Dr. Murphy. It's important that this committee be charged in the right direction. Otherwise, they think they only have, I think, six meetings scheduled. Do we have the dates already for these meetings for them? Are the dates scheduled for these committees to meet yet? Or do they meet on their own? Or they set their schedule on their own?
That's going to be a set up to them to work.
I mean,
we can discuss those things, that they should have those things in place. And we should try to encourage that there be a chairperson who could really help guide these things.
My concern is that going into that first meeting, that they understand what they're charged with. I mean, we could set 12 people out there with a 3 or 4 inch budget, and it could take them months before they even have a direction. So, and maybe we ought to discuss it a little bit tonight as to where the board wants this committee to go, in what direction. I think that should be said.
I think also, I mean, let me just throw my two cents in here, being a person that was never a big committee person over the years, is that it has to be absolutely in cement that the committee makes recommendations to the board. They don't act for the board, and they don't act for the district. They are investigators. They are people that are coming up with ideas and opinions, and they have to formulate what they think the best plan of action may be. But they have to know its recommendations.
Mr. Kieran, an important thing, and I was going to discuss it with Mr. Sayers and Dave, that periodically, whether it be every 1 or 2 weeks or every meeting, board meeting that comes up, that some they come to us and tell them where they're at. It'll be senseless that they come at the end of their tenure, give us all these recommendations, and it's in the wrong direction. So, and I think Mr. Sayers should have some ideas set out early, before we get these people going and not in the right direction.
I agree. Mr. Sayers?
Well, with regards to the State Auditors Committee, I believe that charge is clear. There's certain things that the state controller wants this committee to do, and I think that's the easy one. As far as the Budget Advisory Committee, and Tony, you and I had discussed this, due to the fact that we're already into January and we're coming up in our budget, and I don't want to say this is a practice run for next year, but there's probably going to be some kinks and some questions, and I believe that our main charge was, and I think Jim had also said that we want this to committee to go through this budget line by line, so be it. I mean, it's a lot of lines, and try and find and ask questions and see what monies can be saved. And like you said, we have six meetings. I don't know how many meetings we're going to have by the time the budget has to be adopted. We don't even know, you know, how successful this committee is going to be this particular year. But I think we need to head in this direction, get our feet wet, and move forward.
The problem I see happening is either they're going to be told, they should be told, that their recommendations are going to affect this next budget, or they're not. Because if we as a board sit and start discussing the budget, however we do it, and the committee is not there yet, we already adopt what we have for that section. Now the committee comes back and says, well, we have changes. We're just going to redo. The board's going to have to redo, again, what we've already discussed. So I think it's important that, as Jim said, as Rich said, that this is probably, you know, there may be some big items. They come back right away and say, look, we want the board to look at this. This may be important. I mean, that may happen. But if they go over line by line, I guarantee you know how long it takes us to go. They're not going to be able to get to it in time for this board to make those decisions for this coming budget. I don't think so. But I may be wrong, but I don't know.
Says.
Well, that brings me to my question with regard to the direction that we're going to be heading with our budget. I know last year we had preliminary budget meetings. It was five meetings. One meeting was transportation, another meeting was curriculum, and so on and so forth. In my mind, and we could discuss this now or later, I think that we need to know the direction that we're heading budget-wise, and let's say we are going to look at transportation in an issue, and then perhaps we could give this committee the charge, listen, on this meeting, we're going to be discussing this portion of the budget, so instead of looking over the whole budget, let's just look at this portion of the budget and try and coincide the work they're doing with the work that we're doing so that it works together.
I think that's excellent. I think that's the way to do it. If the committee knows that we're going to be discussing transportation, let them go right to the transportation part
right.
of the budget
right.
and vice and whatever it may be. And then we can maybe establish something this budget year, which would be good.
Well, and then when they could come and talk to us, and they could come with their recommendations prior to even or the beginning of the meeting,
right.
come with their recommendations, we'll agree with their recommendations, we'll sharpen our pencils even further on their recommendations, or we'll say no.
And right, exactly.
Charlie?
Well, Deborah and I went to this fiscal responsibility workshop on a Saturday a few months back. I met someone from another school district that did have a budget committee, and I just want to caution us about what they call them recommendations or call them ideas. At their budget committee, they started calling them recommendations, and then the budget committee came back and started giving the board recommendations. The recommendations weren't congruent to what the board's vision of the school district were. So it might be better to say we have some ideas to present, because if the recommendations and they're not taken, there was a big conflict with the school district that caused a big split in the community, because their budget committee made all these recommendations, which, you know, some of them were so out in left field education-wise that the board could not accept them, and it caused a little bit of a split in the community. Why did you have this committee making recommendations when it should have been basically providing ideas? Because ideas aren't necessarily recommendations, but they're good things for the administration then to go back and take a look at and say, yes, we can do, or that's a good idea, etc.
That's well said, Mr.
No,
Sayers.
I would like to say the same exact thing. I think you're right, because I think when people get on committees, whether they're right or wrong, their recommendations, they assume that their recommendations are then going to become God's gospel or whatever, and then, like you said, you can turn those people in the committee off, and we'll be defeating the purpose. So I would say ideas is a good. Is that a verb or a pronoun?
Look, we want to. The idea is we don't want to. We want to put some directional guidelines on these committees, but we certainly don't want to tie their hands or make them tied into the board so tight that they might as well sit up here and then we've defeated the whole purpose of the community involvement part of it. Mr. Palmera?
What is the tenure of each committee member? Are they on for 2 years, 3 years? Did we say anything, or is it just 1 year?
I think this committee is on the run. I mean, we didn't even get into that. I don't think anybody get into that. You want to make a suggestion now?
I would suggest, especially on the budget committee, that it would be at least 2 years that you would serve on it, because this is a this document is a tough document to digest.
You're talking about two budget committees or just the one we established?
No, the one we establish would, because I think they're going to need to get some experience under their belt. And what appears to someone on the outside and what actually is, and the physical constraints that we have, I think for people to negotiate and to be able to negotiate the document, I think they're going to need experience and time. So I don't know what we told people. I don't recall if we said it's just for this year or it's going to be for 2 years. I don't know, but Deborah has a committee and there's the audit committee, so I don't know whether it behooves us to say, hey, folks, we'd like you to stay for 2 years instead of having them go through this. I'm sure people, as they go along, some will be happy, some won't be. As long as they know going in that and I think Charlie made a good point as far as it being ideas and suggestions and not recommendations, because, but I think people really need to, get a year under their belt. I know just doing a budget. Now, I worked on a budget from every perspective, just about, as an employee, a teacher, an administrator, and now as a board member, and it's a tough document to really come to grips with. So I don't know how you do it and within a certain, with just the first time around. I think it's going to be overwhelming for people. I think taking pieces is a good idea.
I think they could, when they meet, why don't you guys find out from the selected members if they have any problem with 2 years? Does anybody on this board have a problem with these budget committees being two-year term committees? All right, so if they find out that this sitting committee doesn't have a problem with it, then we could make it an official two-year seat. And of course, the committees aren't like, we could next year have that committee grow or replace people if they don't want to be on it. And Deborah, your committee should really be a standing committee, just you're on it as long as you want to be on it until you don't want to be on it. Right? And we have any problems with that, on that type of committee? Yeah, that's kind of just rolls every year. Yeah. Mr. Falco.
This is not to do with the committees, but it has to do with the budget. Can I bring this up regarding an email? Dr. Murphy sent us an email this evening regarding one of our goals as far as communication with the community. He sent us a list of PTA winter visits and a list of PTA presentations. Just so I understand in my own mind, and Dr. Murphy, maybe you could, I see here you start January 9th with the winter visits and end it at February 15th. Then you start with the PTA presentations on April 6th, ending on May 11th. Now, that leaves a gap between the 15th of February till the 6th of April. I'm assuming then that, let me ask the question. Will the board, the adopted budget has to come in on 3/28? Is that the date that the board has to adopt the budget?
Yes.
Is that right, Ms. Singer? All right. Well, here's my concern. This has to do with what happened last year. Will the board and administration, or both, have time to get to the community after the 28th, but still in time to make changes in that budget before the 28th? Because if we're going to adopt a budget on the 28th and then go out to the community, if, and I'm speaking for myself, if the reaction of the community is what it was when I went out to the community last year, I don't think we would have put that budget up last year if we would have heard what we heard from the PTAs that we went to. So let's put a scenario out. We adopt a budget on the 28th, and we get a completely negative response at the presentation meetings. We don't have time to change that budget.
Well, with all due respect, this isn't just last year. This is every year.
Okay, that's
and
true.
And I don't think this is my opinion again. I don't think that the board is going to do the right thing by inviting the people here to hear the budgets.
Okay.
When Dr. Murphy, as Dr. Ruck before him, went around, that's to discuss the budget that's going on the ballot. There will always be unhappy people out there that are going to create a ruckus over what they don't like.
Okay, so
But they have to come here during budget
discussion. So your answer is then the presentations will be after the budget is adopted. That's when you feel
he's going to be going around to other meetings prior to that.
But the budget, the board will not be complete.
The budget won't be completed on his winter visit.
And I'll ask Dr. Murphy. When you start, this goes up to February 2nd, February 15th. The board will have had some budget meetings at that point. Will those decisions or possible decisions be discussed with the community at that time?
I knew there was a gap, and I actually brought it up with Mike tonight because Mike Pomar and someone else gave me the idea, so I wanted to present it to the board tonight. So I made this little note up, town meeting, anyone interested, with a big smiley face because I think it's a great idea, is in between that time have a few town meetings in different locations in the district where and the topic will be budget and encourage people to come out that they could have one-to-one dialogue, sit around in a circle, have some coffee, and have some conversation about some of the direction that we're going in, where we stand at this present time. So it's not in such a formal, forum as a board meeting, but more of a town meeting, a little informal, so people could have some one-to-one dialogue and not be stuck to three-minute conversation. Or sometimes if you're having this conversation, get a little contentious. When you sit down with someone one-to-one and over coffee, you can get some of these discussion periods and ideas out in a more, congenial method. So while I was talking with Mike about it again tonight, he said, is there concern about having too many board members there because it could be considered a quorum? So I was going to go back to Chris Clayton and ask that question. Could we have a town meeting and have some of the board members? There are many of the board members, including community, staff, administrators, whoever wants to show up, without being considered a type of board meeting or a quorum. So that was the concern that Mike brought to me today that I was going to ask the attorney.
Okay, and I think this dovetails a little bit with the discussion that you were having about the committee meetings as well. The Committee on Open Government will generally take the position that if it is an authorized committee of the board and it's conducting public business, that it has to be an open meeting. Whether or not your town meeting would constitute a public meeting requiring notice, is that really what you're aiming at? Or
we'd have three or four locations up, and if people want to show up, and the board doesn't even have to show up. It could be just the superintendent and the business people to get public opinion and just tell them where we are.
Well, first of all, the meeting that you're proposing is very public in its nature anyway, so you're not looking to do that behind closed doors. Anybody, I presume, at the town meetings would be invited and, in fact, encouraged to come.
Absolutely.
And the mere fact that a quorum of the board is standing in the same place having a discussion about school things doesn't necessarily make it a board meeting that needs to be noticed formally. You're permitted to have a conversation in the same geographic location and not have it constitute a board meeting. I think you have to be cautious about how you do that, and obviously you can't take any board action, but to have a general informational session with folks, you may want to limit it to a couple of board members to avoid having a quorum there and be accused in any circumstance of taking a board action.
Mr. Palmer?
I think one of, just to get general information out and get a flavoring of what the community is thinking. It's funny, this morning I had an appointment somewhere. One of the people who was taking care of me was a former resident, and she had just moved out of here. She lives in Rocky Point now. And she said, I heard you're selling this east. And I said, no, we're not. But there's so much misinformation out there. So my hope was that, I know, Tony, there is a website, but unfortunately, not everybody sits in front of their computer, and not a lot of folks don't have a computer. So but I think the purpose of these town meetings is to give people a chance to come out and, as long as they're not carrying weapons, you know, to come out and to, you know, to ask questions in an open forum in an informal type of way. And, you know, and for people to be able to answer the best they can. Just so we get an idea of where these folks are coming from, what they're thinking about. Because a lot of people don't want to come and sit through a board meeting. It's as simple as that.
That's why we have this on the radio. And that's why, actually, that Dr. Murphy's going around to the PTAs. And I've been present at a number of them. And at those PTA meetings, a lot of the current rumors that are out there are addressed. So the forums are trying to be set up. And, you know, I'm not against this town meeting kind of concept, but I just, to stay on your topic, and I have met a lot of people also that have really not been updated about what's going on. But in all honesty, those people aren't going to come to the town meeting either. And they're going to consistently say they don't know what's going on because they don't read the newsletter either. So we're never going to get to everybody. But we really just have to keep trying to throw
it
out there.
Well, I think it's another opportunity, Jim.
Yeah, I'm not against that. What I'm just saying to you is that there are people that you're just never going to get to. You know, they're just not going to happen. Mr. Sayers?
No, I just wanted to echo that thought because one of the reasons, and we were hoping to get the radio, you know, these board meetings up on the radio station for budgetary time so that the people that can't get out at least have the opportunity to listen. You know, to hear what we're proposing. I, too, am not against a town forum or a town meeting, but you could consider this a town meeting. And I know people don't have to stay for the whole meeting, but during budgetary time, that's when we get the people. Or usually after the budget's adopted, that's when we get all the people coming down screaming. So the idea... I mean, we're here. We're opening the lines of communication. And to me, a board meeting, you know, it is a quorum. This is also a town meeting. In my mind, this is the ultimate town meeting.
I would have it prior to the adoption of the budget, the town meetings. Yeah, prior to the adoption.
Mrs. Slomkowski?
Since we're on the subject of committees and budget, a while back... I received a memo from Dr. Murphy with regards to a committee that's being formed to explore our transportation issues, and I wanted to be part of that committee. Can you tell me where we are with that committee?
I think that was to develop the RFP, Bruce. You can...
Right. That's exactly what, we solicited 5 school districts, RFPs, Steve Schabold, Ron Sachs, I, Jay Krieger, putting it together. Actually, they're finalizing it right now. Then we'll get the blessings from legal, and then we'll sit and we'll go over. This is the large contract of buses. That's what we're talking about.
And you're going to let Deborah know she wants to sit with
Deborah. Deborah volunteered to sit on. Right. Once we finalize the RFP before it goes out to bid, we'll sit and go over the specifics.
Okay.
Deborah volunteered.
Any other questions on this?
Well, just with the town meeting, I'd just like a little direction from the board. If you are interested in the idea, that's great. If not, you've just saved me 3 or 4 nights out that I could
no,
spend.
No, I think everybody, does anybody have a problem with that? I think, you know, if you're willing to do it, and you appear like you are, a little bit reluctantly, but you are.
No, I'm all for it. I really am. I think it'd be a great time to sit down with people.
I don't have a problem with that. Anybody have a problem with that? Right,
so and then with the budget, just to let the community know, since everyone's here, the memo I sent out to the board today, we've put together 16 meetings at the various schools at budget time. So we'll do 16 mini presentations so that it's all over the place. The only 2 schools we're just going to combine, East, I believe, in Sequoia, and North in Seneca, but 16 different presentations, 15 minutes on the budget, 15 minutes Q&A, and we think a half hour is enough that people really should be able to sit through. Anything more than that, you start to lose the audience, and then it becomes sometimes a one-to-one dialogue with one particular administrator and one particular person from the audience. And we don't want to hold people captive at these meetings. And if anyone has any more questions, we'll be free to, you know, we could sit down with them in the office or answer questions or get on the phone with them. But a good, solid presentation. And then we'll do one big presentation where we'll go over everything in detail and spend as much time as we want with the entire community. So that... You have lots of opportunity for the small meetings, or you want to go for the one large meeting. But we are going to communicate all the ideas that are out there with regard to the budget.
Thank you. Anybody else on that? Okay. Carol, visitors? Sal Nicosia?
Good evening. A happy and healthy new year to each of you and your families. And may we be in harmony in June as we are today. I'm intrigued by a couple of things in the deliberations of tonight. The ECR, which is the employment contribution, it's very fascinating. I was wondering if we're going to try to educate our public about understanding the budget. This is an item that is very significant because it hits people to where, you know, about the fact that we pay for people's retirement. I'm a member of that particular unit. I understand it because I'm a member, and I get a newsletter every so often to understand what's going on. But a lot of people out there don't, and I think it's incumbent upon the board to enlighten people by having an article from a school board member or somebody like Bruce Singer to explain in layman terms the significance of this contribution, which I think most people don't know. If you were to ask a household people, you know, how much goes for teachers' retirement and how does it work? And I think that I really was very admirable of Mr. The way Richard brought it out about how to explain this, because he asked about the term accrual and all that kind of stuff. A lot of people don't understand those terms. So I think that that would help to take away the edge of paranoia or the edge of, you know, anxiety about how people pay their taxes and what they go through. So I think that's a very significant thing. I'm very fascinated by the fact that what's the projection for the next 10 years? Can you make a projection of how many teachers you have here at a certain percentage, how much it's going to cost for the next 10 years? And that would show people that we're looking with vision as to what it's going to cost this district to provide the retirement for the teachers that are here. Does it make a difference, for example, if the teachers who retire now, who are at top salaries, the amount of money that's actually going to go in is going to be less, isn't it? Because if you retire a $100,000 teacher and you replace them with a $40,000 teacher, even though it's 8% of 40, not 8% of 100. And those things are things that people can understand if you get them to explain that. And what has been the last 5 years in terms of how many teachers we've had retire over these last 5 years and how many new teachers we've added in place of them, so that the cost is different of what we paid 5 years ago to those teachers that retired in the last 5 years. I hope I'm making sense, but I know what I'm trying to say. I hope I'm conveying that to you. Because money can be explained economically. I taught social studies, and economics was a subject that I really enjoyed because I had teachers when I went to college that explained it not in a theoretical sense, but in a very practical sense. And when you do that, you can become a good negotiator about how to explain economics. The other thing I wanted to point out was the fact that as I came in here early, I took a look at the fair that is offered young people here. And I nostalgically remembered that years ago when I worked in Patchogue, I was a crisis counselor in elementary school. And I remember working with young children. And I happen to also belong to the Feingold Association, which works with children that are having difficulty with allergies and all kinds of things that are affected by foodstuffs, like colorings and dyes. And I remember working with young people that over a couple of weeks, when I was able to intervene in the house and change the child's diet with the approval and understanding of the mother, working with the Dr. DeGrosser at the time, who was very supportive of that, a pediatrician in Patchogue, that the change was remarkable. Now, we spend a lot of money here in this school working with special ed kids. And I'm wondering if we did a research about how many of these kids are suffering from ADD and all that, and whether it's affiliated with the fact that their diets, that we might be contributing to it. And I hate to think that we're contributing to their lack of good health because of the foods we offer and the fact that we have these to offer. Because I was talking to someone and said, well, you know, it's hard to change kids' tastes. But if they didn't have these things and they had to eat the fare that was offered, which was nourishing and good, it would take a while for them to acclimate to that, but I think it could be done. So that's one thing I'm concerned about. I've always been. Another area that I was concerned about was the fact that we pay a lot of money to educate our children, sometimes who are taking advanced placement courses. I don't know how many we've got. I think we've got about 60 of them at least. 21 advanced placement kids in the whole school?
21 courses.
Oh, 21 courses. How many students?
We figured that out just a couple of weeks ago. There were, I think, 1,100 kids who participated at seats, but about 400 or 500 kids who participate in AP. So if you have, say about 500, but some of them take multiple, so it adds up to about 1,200 seats or so.
See, what fascinates me is I would wonder if we could possibly get young people to have a choice that when they reach the 11th and 12th grade, and the guidance counselors could work with this, because I was a counselor and I often thought about it at that time, that we could get them to consider if they wanted to graduate here earlier, like 6 months, and start their college work in January rather than wait till in June.
This was, Sal, we discussed this at the last board meeting.
I'm sorry.
No, but in depth. And so there was...
Okay, I didn't get any...
It's being considered, so we'll get you online. I'll get you online on a computer one of these days.
I'm online, but okay. It's hard for me to spend 4 hours at the computer.
Didn't you listen to the radio?
I have... no. Okay. But anyway...
Excuse me, Mr. Nicosia.
Yes.
I believe I showed you how to download the website.
I think
all you need is an MP3 player, and you'll be okay.
All right, but you have to understand... there are certain things I'm still working on because I have senior moments with that. But another thing is the fact that a couple of years ago, I had suggested that we put on the agenda having students be elected by the students and have them shadow the school board. Now, I know it's going to take a referendum. Is it possible to put that as an item on your agenda this year so that in May we can see it on the ballot? And see how the people react in the community. They might be interested in that. That's my... Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you, Mr. Koshy. Janet?
Really quick. I think Chris said, so those other meetings have to be open to the public. So do they have to be posted? Because maybe then the people that didn't get on the committees can come sit in and get informed and maybe join another year.
Yeah, I'll take a look at that, Janet, and get back to you at the next meeting. The general concept that's proffered by the Committee on Open Government is where a committee is duly authorized by the board and is, quote, conducting public business, then that meeting should be open to the public. Whether that requires the same notification issues that a board member would have, I don't know. And also, you know, I haven't seen the agenda of what the meetings are. I don't know if what they're doing at each and every occasion could be characterized as, you know, doing public business. Although when you're talking about audit and budget and things like that process, I think fairly they could be characterized as doing public business. And I don't know that the board has any quarrel. I'd have to defer to the board members as to whether they would.
If it's open to the public, it helps if people know where they are. And to piggyback that, I know you were saying 2-year term for people. You might want to consider staggering that, some 1 and some 2 and some 3, so you, just like the board or a BLT, so you never have to start fresh again. If this is successful, you never have to throw out everybody and start totally new. You have some continuity and keep it going. And then lastly, ConnectQuad has a budget advisory committee, has for many years. Maybe Mike can call somebody. They've obviously maybe worked out some kinks so you guys don't have to reinvent the wheel. But I think they've been doing it many, many years and could give you some good ideas. That's it.
Thank you. Anybody else, Carol? Okay, future agenda items. I think we all have a barrel full of those. And that's it. The next meeting will be Tuesday, January 17th, and right here. I need a motion to close. There's no exec tonight.
So
moved. Mr. Sayers, Mr. Boddy, all in favor?
Aye.
So carried, unanimous. Thank you very much, everybody.
The following meeting has been brought to you by the St. Jerome Central School District as a public service to our growing community. If you have any questions or comments about the meeting you just heard, you may call the St. Jerome District Office at 631-471-1300 during normal school hours. Or you can write to the Superintendent of Schools at 245 Union Avenue, Holbrook, New York, 11741. Information concerning our school district and about our school board can be viewed on our St. Jerome website at www.stjerome.edu.